this is Cold Fusion News. Some time ago, about 2, maybe 3 weeks ago, a reader sent in an Ask a Muse question regarding security. Since I talk a lot about working with stakeholders and working with folks who have some say over projects, his question related to how to communicate with stakeholders on the needs, the security needs of an application, why it's important to code an application in such a way as to make it secure. Here's his question. How do I educate my employer on the concepts of application security? How do I get them past the "we have a firewall and a DMZ, we're secure" mentality? Specifically, in the past, I've tried to use info from owasp.org to help, but they got lost. That "lost" is in quotes. Well, owasp.org is an open source site dedicated to helping folks understand how to code web applications in such a way as to make them more secure. OWASP stands for the Open Web Application Security Project. And it's a great site. It has lots of great insights and great information, not just about specific coding techniques, but also about approaches to things like authentication, how to handle sessions, all sorts of neat checklists and items that you can use that will benefit you. And as a developer, I recommend that you go there and check it out. I'm not surprised that a layman looking at that same site got lost, not surprised at all. And more to the point, the user who sent me this question has put his finger on something that's very, very true and very, very crucial for developers of web applications and project managers to get across to stakeholders. Applications need to be coded in a certain way to make them more secure. If you don't, you're basically allowing malicious users to do an end run around all of the security that you can place out there on the border of your network, or internal controls on your network, or auditing, or whatever. If your code isn't secure, you're basically opening the door wide open and saying, come on in. So what happened was I took that question and I began a quest to develop a strategy for security and to somehow get that down in my blog in a way that my readers and my listeners could understand. And I created 5 posts related to security, each one of them, fairly lengthy, that dealt with the issue of security. And this podcast is the first of 5 podcasts that follow. Each one of them, or maybe 4, maybe 5, depends. But each one of them will detail what I've already posted on the blog. So if you don't want to wait for me to go ahead and record the rest of these podcasts, you can actually go to the blog, look at the latest or nearly the latest entry there on the security pyramid, and you'll get a clue as to where we're headed. Let's begin. First of all, my first piece of advice to this specific user is don't direct a non-geek user to this OWASP site. It's not surprising that the user got lost. In fact, don't direct any non-geek user to an open source project site. There's way too freewheeling, and there's not enough marketing copy in them, and there's not enough step 1, step 2, step 3 in them to make them useful to non-geek users. You might as well be broadcasting Shakespeare in Hellenistic Greek. Open source projects do have a wealth of information, but the information usually isn't written very good or very, very well. Although I did find this site to be okay. You know how it goes. Open source folks and geeks, they like to use acronyms. There's lots of acronyms throughout the site. They're not necessarily well defined. There's not a lot of well organized information that gives priority to the bulleted points as opposed to the detail, and they can be very difficult for a novice to navigate, and difficult for developers to navigate sometimes, at least without some groundwork. So even though you're trying to get them beyond the first level of security in your discussion, you probably still need to start there. You need to start at that first level, and you need to have the groundwork of that first level of security in order to make a difference in your discussion. Recently, we worked with a company that was a very, very large company. It had dozens of IT staff, more than one help desk, lots and lots of hoops for us to jump through to be a contractor for them, lots of contracts for us to sign, and NDAs and legal agreements and all of that rigmarole. And we went through all of that. They sent us our security credentials, and we're all ready. And finally, we were ushered in to be able to see the code. Well, the first thing we found was that the code was full of unchecked variables being passed to queues and databases. And since they were using numeric pins for login, I was able to, in just a short half an hour, to come up with a very simple SQL injection attack that allowed me to log right in. You know, I put something like 555 space or 1 equals 1 in the password field, and boom, I was in, just like that. Just like saying open sesame. When I showed that to them, they were appalled, and it made us look good, made them look pretty queasy, made them feel pretty queasy. And this illustrates the most common misconception about security. It is not what you keep out that is usually the most dangerous to your security. It is usually the things that you are already letting in that wreak havoc on your system. Part of the reason for this is that the metaphors that we use when we deal with security are simply inadequate. I realize that metaphors are only an aid to understanding things that are more concrete, but metaphors have a surprising impact on our viewpoint. For example, in Chicago, there are the Bears and there are the Cubs, and they're both sports teams from the city of the big shoulders, the Windy City. The Windy City thinks of itself as a big, rough, and tumble Midwestern town. Neither team is necessarily thought of as great. The Bears had an exceptional season in 85, but other than that, they haven't exactly lit up the world. The Cubs have had some moderate success by going to the playoffs, but have failed for nearly a century to reach the World Series and to win the World Series. Still, one of these teams has a reputation for being tough and grizzled, grinded out, persistent. The other team has the reputation of being the lovable losers. Can you guess which one is which? You guessed it. The Bears are the tough team. They're ones with a reputation for smash-mouth football, while the erstwhile Cubs are universally beloved in spite of languishing in the National League cellar for 80 years. At least part of the formula for the sentiment is that adorable Cubby logo. Who can resist a little bear cub? Sure, they grow up to rip your face off and eat your lawn furniture, but when they're small, they're so darn cute. Whereas a bear is a big, tough, you know, grizzly, mean critter. So the metaphor kind of follows the reputation of the team. And the same is true with security. We choose metaphors for security that come from a bygone era and make sense to us. One of the metaphors we use when dealing with security is that of a bank vault. Strong, impenetrable steel walls with a stern guard at the door, eyeing everyone who enters. But what if you had all the permissions you needed to get into the bank vault? And better still, what if you didn't need to actually remove the contents of the bank vault to cause mischief? What if you could do it simply by standing in the corridor and reading Hamlet? What if the bank allowed everyone to access the vault but restricted them to using only the finger and thumb of one hand? Or what if they required blindfolds? You can see the problem with comparing security on the internet to security at a bank. The truth is that internet lets people in. That's what it does. And you want those people in, at least the ones with which you're doing business. You have to let them in. You want them to be able to come in, use your applications legitimately, and you're not interested in placing burdensome restrictions on them and requirements on them that makes doing business with you more challenging. So many business owners, CIOs, CTOs, and opt for that bank metaphor and fail to take it any further. They install a watchdog at the perimeter. All the security is facing outward. It looks for threats, blocks them before they get in the network. And that's important stuff. It would be foolhardy indeed to run your network without a firewall, just like it would be foolish to paint a big sign on your house that said, "Door unlocked and plasma screen inside." But the metaphor fails at that point. Just keeping people out is like the first level of Maslow's pyramid of self-actualization. You remember that thing that you learned in high school, the hierarchy of cognitive needs that Maslow developed in behavioral psychology? That first level was the base level. Without this level, you don't have any way of being happy, but you can't be happy with just that level. That first level is like food and shelter, physiological needs. And then the next level is safety, and the next one love, and the next one, you know, esteem. And finally, you had that actualization that you were trying to achieve. So when it comes to security, that just a firewall and just border security, that's like that first level. Yeah, you have to have it. It's necessary. But it is only a step. It is only step one in what takes several steps. And we're going to use this whole pyramid idea to enhance our thinking about security. That's our new metaphor, the security pyramid. And it goes like this. The first level, as we were talking about today, border agents, protection from the outside world. Second level, policing, internal network security. Third level, social circle, people policy. How do you handle the social engineering hacks? Fourth level, personal space. What is your application environment? The specific components that make up your application, the external resources it accesses, the database, the web server. What is that like? And the final level is the health of the application, meaning the security of the code, the coding standard, and the way the application is actually written. So that's where we're going with this podcast, and without any further ado, we're going to begin part one, protection from the outside world, or the border patrol. It doesn't take a genius to recognize that the integrity of your country has a bearing on your feeling of actual security as an individual. In the United States, the armed forces protect us from the hostility of nations. The INS protects us from those awful aliens who want to rob us of our unwanted low-paying jobs in order to feed their families. And the FDA protects us from food, at least food that doesn't meet a certain health standard. I should mention that your view of these agents of government will vary widely depending on your political orientation and whether you live in California. Still, it's safe to say that the civil structure that defines us as a country is part of what makes us feel safe. In the same way, you must have border agents protecting your network. This is really what most people think about when they talk about security. Your network should be protected by a firewall, and you should have an organizing principle that segments network traffic, like a DMZ, for example. You should have monitoring and auditing that ensure that you can react when something is wrong, when something's amiss. For most networks, the border agent consists of a network design that centers around hardware devices. A packet filtering firewall is a good example. It monitors packets and ports on your network, and it tests traffic against rules that you set up. Certain things are allowed in, certain things are allowed out, and everything else is denied. Now, you might remember the old days. In the old days, these devices, they were actually set up as a denial service. Everything on the network was allowed, in and out. And then when there was a problem, when a virus, when a port was being scanned, when something was happening routinely, that specific service or port would then be blocked. Now, that's the way some older networks are still set up. For the most part, though, modern firewalls protect all the ports and all the protocols unless they're specifically enabled. They block everything except what you specifically enable. Modern firewalls also use something called stateful inspection. That means the firewall is concerned about more than just the individual packets. It's also aware of the session or state of the connection in question. For example, a computer gaining access through a port for one purpose, let's say FTP, cannot take over that port for some other purpose. The stateful firewall monitors the connections, not just the packets, and for that reason it's often referred to as a stateful packet inspection firewall. And if you can see what I'm doing, I'm actually moving my fingers in the little quote symbol, stateful packet inspection. Other border agents exist for specific protocols. Devices like the Barracuda Network Spam Firewall, for example, examine specific kinds of traffic, SMTP, and protect you from words like Viagra and Cialis. Devices like the ISA Server, which is a security product put out by Microsoft. That's right, I said a security product put out by Microsoft. Do double duty as a caching and acceleration server and a packet monitoring firewall for just HTTP and HTTPS traffic. These devices work on a very low level, and they're very sophisticated. Unfortunately, firewalls and specific firewall type devices are often badly configured. Cisco, for example, reckons that the most egregious and persistent security problem with its own security-conscious devices is that network engineers often leave them configured with a default username and password. The default username and password. That's amazing to me. That means another engineer or someone who could just read documentation can log in by researching how the device comes from the factory. In my own neighborhood, there are at least two wireless connections using Linksys routers in the default settings. I know this because I also own a Linksys router. And one day I was troubleshooting my own router and I couldn't get in for some reason. I reset the router back to the factory defaults and I got right in. And then I realized I was on somebody else's router. Sure, that happens with little Soho routers, you say, but nobody would configure a corporate network like that, would they? Oh, yes, they would. Human nature is lazy and optimistic. When dealing with network security, that's a bad combination of attributes. When setting up new devices, people say, I'll change the password later, or it's inside, no one will notice, or I think I saw the Hot Now sign on at Krispy Kreme, I have to run. So the first thing, configure the firewall correctly. You might have a $5,000 firewall, but it doesn't do you any good to wear Armani if your fly is open. Some firewalls are better than others, but all of them are crap if you don't know what you're doing. Start by asking the question, what do we want to allow into this network? What are we going to allow out of the network? Make your initial firewall provisions very strict and modify them slowly as you experience difficulty and challenges. When modifying your rule set, resist the temptation to simply open everything up to solve a problem. Get used to reading documentation. Get used to searching through forums. Get used to working hard at solving these little nitpicky problems that crop up on firewalls and that drive you crazy. If you're using Cisco and the Cisco EOS is beyond your capability, you might try one of the many firewall devices that offer a higher ease of use and a lower learning curve. I've heard good things about SonicWall, WatchGuard. I like Cisco and I use Cisco, but their usability standard really sucks. It's practically impossible to find anything, any kind of a GUI to work with on Cisco. You just simply have to tell them that to the command line and do almost everything there. That's just the long and the short of it. So the point of this particular part one of my security post is, yes, you do need border security, but it is the first level of security. Get a firewall, configure it properly, and move on to part two, which is internal policing. And that's what we're going to cover on our next podcast. This is Blowfish News. Thanks for listening, and I'll check in with you later.